Well, Mike Malevsky here, and I'm happy to welcome Mayor Vern Ruprecht of the city of Wasilla. Welcome, Vern.
Thank you, Mike. It's great to be here with you.
All right. Now, we're going to do a little bit in the way of an intro to the set of questions for the interview. And basically, what we came to believe it, that would be helpful if what we did was agreed on a general theme. And that general theme is, how do you work with others? And as background, both nationally and here in Alaska, there seems to have developed a more than usual political polarization that's resulted sometimes in gridlock and decisions made by use of power that isn't always backed by a majority of citizens. So we've developed five questions here. The first one is, how do you view the present quality of state government, and particularly, what's your approach to working with others of different perspectives to ensure quality government?
Well, my perspective right now on the quality of the state government, if I had to rate it on a 1 to 10, I would probably put it right dead in the middle, somewhere in a 4 to 5. And the reason I say that, and I can qualify that, is that I have spent 6 years as the mayor of the city of Wasilla, and I've lobbied. I go down to Juneau quite a bit. I've made trips to agencies, to elected officials' offices, the governor's office, numerous times. And, you know, you have some ears listening, some ears not listening, and you try to get your message across, and the fact of the matter is, a lot of them, there is already an agenda afoot as to the direction that some legislators would rather take the state. And so sometimes you feel like you get some lip service from some and then some help from others. It all depends. And as a result, you know, people being what they are, some will not listen because they're thinking about other things, because they're thinking about what they want to think about. And then I've engaged a number of other legislators, and they've been really good about it because they sit and they actively listen. And they may point out to me maybe some error in my thinking or what I'm not considering in what I propose or what I believe we should be doing, especially as it hits the city of Wasilla, my area, my district. And as for road planning and the number of dollars that need to be invested, education, amongst a number of things. And then, you know, I will respond, or I will do my research and respond to them. And sometimes, and quite often with some people, you do find them coming to your way of thinking and you hit a compromise. I like to classify or make myself be, and always have been, a centrist. I'm neither hard right nor hard left. I mean, I always believe that the American government is the type of a government, including the state of Alaska, where you have to look at the different perspectives and listen to the differing opinions, like I have for 6 years chairing Wasilla City Council meetings. And then if you can change my mind, absolutely. I will add it in and weigh it into the decision, and we'll come to some kind of agreement and compromise. That is the dance of legislation, and it is sorely missing in this state government, and has been for quite a long time.
Okay, thank you for that. Second question, how would you describe ethics in government and the money often connected to the issue? And what would you specifically do to ensure a good ethical atmosphere?
Well, you know, politics being what it is, it being all local, I don't care what level it is, there's always going to be people coming forward with the checkbooks. And when you're mounting a campaign, it sure does help a lot to have some help. Mm-hmm. But that's why I particularly am running and as an independent, because I don't believe that I should be committing or be owned by anybody, because I've represented the city of Wasilla as its mayor-manager, and I'm also moving forward to represent District 7. And that's 18,000-plus people. And so, you know, the folks that don't have the money or the political stroke to get to me, they have a right to be heard. They have a right to be considered, if it's the individual, because where there is one, there is a majority of one. But if it's a collective group, they may not have the dollars to affect what I'm going to do. But they certainly are a voice, and they should not be disenfranchised as citizens. So, again, weighing it all back in. And I believe that, you know, the money, to a certain degree, can corrupt. We've seen that in the past in this state, and it's been horrendous for us, and we're still rattling from that. And in order to set good ethics, you know, I can only put that back on my education and my training and the parenting I had. And if you're straightforward with others and you just tell them what's on your mind and you can look a person in the eye and talk to them and know that they're not, you're not flim-flamming. And the fact is, I think you set ethics by example. You know, a lot of the great leaders in the history of the world, let alone this country and in this state, no matter what people thought about people, maybe like, say, well, Bill Egan and Jay Hammond and a lot of them, the fact of the matter is they listened, they actively listened, they took it all under consideration, and they set the example for what we needed to do. And we saw legislators like that in the past. I mean, I'm fond of saying there was a time you couldn't tell the Republicans from the Democrats unless you picked up the scorecard and went, oh, there's an R and there's a D. Because those folks years ago moved together, and they kept each other ethically balanced, just like we were taught to do as kids in classrooms or on the street or in a playing field or wherever we were at. It was imperative upon ourselves to keep our friends and our neighbors in checks and balances with us. Okay. And it's leading by example.
All right. Thank you. What would you say are the most serious environmental problems that need to be addressed? And in particular, what do you see as a state role in finding a solution to those problems?
When I think of environmental problems, you have to take a more broad spectrum approach to it. Because I think key in the environmental issues is human health and well-being first. And that means sufficient food, and quality water. And we certainly don't want to despoil any more of the water that we have. And it's a resource that seems abundant, but in danger right now. And you have to take that human element in and all the living things in this world. And so one of the biggest things critically here would be oil spills. I'm a little concerned about that. I mean, after the Exxon Valdez, the nightmare, as it were, and that seems to kind of remediate itself. We saw what happened in the Gulf. And they're talking about offshore drilling here in Alaska, which the state at this point doesn't have a real say in. That's a federal issue. And after witnessing firsthand, many of us, what happened in the Gulf not that many years ago down in the Gulf of Mexico, we don't have the response here yet or the infrastructure to respond to an Arctic oil spill. And that could be devastating up north of Barrow or anywhere out there. I mean, the Coast Guard's trying to play some catch-up. The oil companies are trying to play some catch-up. And the state certainly is attempting to get into the game, but it doesn't quite have the voice or the hand in the game that it needs. I mean, those are our shores and our waterways. And I think it's incumbent upon the state government to exercise its muscle in whatever way it can to be an absolute player in that game. Further with the environment, you know, land management, I think, is important. Land use is important. Like I said, consumption. And another one that's critical to me is waste. Right now, we're nearing 7 billion people on the planet. Now, in Alaska, we don't feel that density. Mm-hmm. But if all we do is look locally in the state of Alaska, and we've started managing our waste here better than we did decades ago, because I can remember going over to the Matsu Burrow Dump, and you back down with your pickup truck, and in the wintertime you slid back down the hill into a big bonfire. It was a lot of fun, I guess. But those days are long gone, and then trying to get back up out of that pit was always a thrill. You needed a sled dog team to pull your truck up out of there. And so we're trying to do what we can, because waste management is huge. Because for those of us that recall where the Anchorage City dump was, down at Merrill Field, mm-hmm. that was quite a thrill. And that was dead in the middle of the city, it seemed like. And then they finally put a new waste management out there, and that's a big problem. So, you know, you can only allow so much things to seep into the ground and have the throwaway articles of a society. We've got to find maybe some other way of dealing with this, and maybe using the types of material that actually are reclaimed in a landfill, unlike what we have been throwing in there a good share of my lifetime, especially with the plastics and a lot of things like that. And so we got to be careful, because we don't want that leaching into our water. And most of us live on a well water, or some variant of that, like the city of Wasilla Palmer have city water wells. Well, they can be contaminated, and we don't want to keep drilling into the aquifer where we hit seawater, and then where are we at? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think it needs proper oversight by the state government, DEC and DNR, they have to be extremely proactive in that area. And I know from the DNR DEC studies a couple of years ago, to the west side of the Mat-Su Valley, they were worried about the water table because of the density over there. And what's going to happen if we run out of water? And we know that the borough with the cities out here right now are trying to get a waste treatment plant up and running. And I've been in the discussion for 6 years. And people just keep coming and they keep moving in and we're flushing more toilets. And yet we do not have a proper way of getting rid of it. And the pumpers out here, the septic pumpers, are taking everything to Anchorage. Well, it's got to the point Anchorage isn't taking any more of the valley's waste. So,
sure.
I mean, those are, you know, to me, the environmental issues that are impacting us here and more nationally and globally. Of course, it is public health and quality food and quality water. Because without it, you know, we'll find ourselves in Brave New World somewhere down the road, and that won't be a very pleasant picture for us. So.
Okay. Thank you. The state of Alaska has chosen to not participate in an expansion of Medicaid as offered by the federal government. What's your understanding of government's role to make sure every Alaska has access to health care, along with education about healthier living, early treatment, and so on?
Well, you know, I think that goes back to that human component of the environmental condition, and that's quality of life. And how that's lived and how healthy you can be. Now, looking at what happened, I believe there's two sides of the argument on the Medicaid issue here in Alaska. It's dollars-driven, needless to say, with a declining state budget or burgeoning state budget with no dollars really in the kitty. And the fact is the formula that's used. I believe that under the Medicaid system in the state of Alaska, the match is that it's a number of people that – it's about 38, 40,000 statewide that are 138% at the federal poverty level, which puts a family in there at like $40,000 a year. And we all know the reality of living here and the cost of our fuel, the cost of our heat, our lights, our food, and our shipping, that's damn few dollars to go around for people to make good on, and especially the retired, the older, the elderly, the sick, or the people born infirm. And if we're going to have a quality life and we're going to show that we do, in fact, care for our neighbor, because that is one of our jobs, then we have to really revisit this and maybe start allocating dollars in different directions out of this state budget so that we ensure that there is a quality life here in Alaska for the people that live here and the people who fall ill, especially the ones that can ill afford to pay for that care or that lifestyle and be able to be productive.
Okay. Well, you've touched upon the issue of funding budgets. Many observers suggest that the next few years will see a decline in revenue that will put increasing pressure on the state's budgets, especially the funding of education as well as basic services such as transportation, infrastructure, and public safety. How do you see the legislature contributing to solutions for matching funding and needs?
Well, I think the governor – like any executive of a city, you know, whether it's manager or mayor manager, I mean, you prepare the budget for your legislature like we do for our city councils and our borough assemblies, and we pass it on down. Now they debate it, and then they pass it back up. Traditionally, what's happened in the state budget is the governor will pass down a budget to them for everything he thinks he needs to do, and then the legislature will start mincing around it and checkmarking a few things off, but they also have a big chunk of dollars sitting on the side where, you know, that's for capital improvement projects or whatever picadillo might be in the mix, and then it's a squabble to dice it up, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And it's not as visible to the average citizen, especially somebody who's working their way through that budget process down there. They use this thing called the CAPSA system, but it's not that open. Because what really happens at the end of the budget cycle, the legislature then takes a select number of legislators and it goes in a closed door and you can't find out who they are. And all of a sudden, things that might need to be in there aren't. And things that, why are those in there? They made it through. And out it comes as a finished product. Then you go up back to the governor and he's, I believe, the only governor out of the 50 that has line item veto and a red pencil, and I have one as a mayor, And I go, really, it's not what you want to have, it's what you have to have to accomplish this job. So I think if it was more visible to the naked eye, the process that's used, and not the one they are using or claim that is more visible a process to everybody, that it's actually out there in the open. Because it seems ridiculous to me that a governor, you know, they get their needs from their commissioners like I do from my directors. But I think it's imperative upon the chief executive first to go through that and say, what is it you really need to have, not what you want to have? You know, what about the redundancy in your government? What about there's a lot of costs and a lot of waste? And then you pass it to your legislature, and then they mull it over for either mull it for lack of a better way of expressing it, and then shoot it back up to the government and say, that's it. This is how we see this. But that has to be a very open process where everybody understands what's going in there and why it's going in there. So I think that's the way we have to approach it. As legislators, it has to be open and spirited discussions, not just coalitions and individuals running coalitions telling the coalition's member my way or the highway. Because when you only have a few people doing all the deciding, I don't think we get a good quality product for the public.
Okay. Well, thank you for the answers. This is an opportunity for you to add anything else that we have not touched upon that you'd like to throw in.
Well, like I said probably earlier in this interview, I'm a centrist, and I'm also very much a student of history. And I witness and observe through the time and history that the most successful governments and the most successful people in government were the ones that could take the centrist position. In the second half of the 20th century, up until the early part of the 21st century, we saw leaders, we saw presidents, for example, that were very centrist. I mean, I can name amongst them in my lifetime Dwight Eisenhower. He was an absolute centrist in many, many ways. He had to be because the way all those egos he had to juggle during the Allied invasion as the Supreme Allied Commander, and that's some big egos with generals. And I see you nodding knowingly, Mike, because we're both former military officers. But he managed to balance it, and he got it done. Of course, Reagan was considered a centrist, and Clinton was very much a centrist. Mm-hmm. I mean, he could work both sides. Reagan on the one side, he could turn around and say, look, one of my best buddies over here is Tip O'Neill, the Speaker of the House. I mean, the consummate Democrat out of Massachusetts. Ted Stevens, for example, 40 years down there, his best friend was Daniel Inouye, who's a Democrat from Hawaii. And those guys and folks could get things done because, okay, I don't completely agree with this and you don't completely agree with that. Where do we meet in the middle? Now, for years, I was a practicing attorney, and I like to say I'm recovering as an attorney, but that's all negotiations and compromise. As the mayor of the city of Wasilla, I've had to do a lot of compromise and negotiation with the unions in my city. I have three. We just went through finishing up another contract with the 302 operating engineers, and it's give and take. It's not, you know, everybody gets one big thing. And I've always believed that in negotiations, and I attended Harvard School last year on negotiations, an international training session again, and met people from all over the world to negotiate for governments and business, and it was a fantastic experience. And what you find is everybody from a negotiation has to push away from the table satisfied but a little hungry. But that's the way the whole thing has to work. And if we don't work it that way, we won't be successful because somebody will always walk away completely, terribly, horribly disappointed. And now you're going to get the backlash and the boomeranging. And then it becomes too strident, becomes too polarized. There is no discussion. Noses are bent. Feelings are rehearsed. The glasses are broken against the wall. And the war is on. And that's always counterproductive, whether it's in discussions with other people or discussions between other countries, and which always lead to the inevitable, you know, dastardly wars. And you'd think by the time we got to this point in our history, we'd have learned better. And I think if you just – you may get angry, but as long as you're reasoned and you're tempered, we can succeed.
Okay.
And so, you know, I'm running for the District 7, which is Wasilla and its greater area over there, because – even though I have a registered party affiliation, I am a Republican, and I believe in a lot of those principles. The fact of the matter is that, you know, it's become too polarized between the major political parties. And we hear nothing but a whole lot of cacophonous noise out there lately, and I don't hear anybody telling me what they're going to do or what they have done. And, you know, as a result, I mean, I can look at my record and stand on the record as mayor of the city of Wasilla, $20 million in the bank, forward funding a library project with no city debt, $20 million in the bank, a lot of infrastructure done, roads planned, built, everything else, 91 acres of additional parkland added to the city, and then a place where people can come in and do business. And we brought in landscaping. We've insisted on our landscaping code so it's a more pleasant environment. Because for 6 years, I fought against this strip mall mentality, and we actually started building a true downtown Wasilla. We got a comp plan in. We have an overlay downtown business plan in there or development plan, and we're well on our way to doing it all. But it just takes digging your heels in, a little determination, and getting compromise from people and agreement with people to get that done. Believe me, in the 6 years, it wasn't always easy with certain groups and, you know, and even wrestling with the city council. It's not an easy job. But if you believe in what you're doing, you stick to it, you can get it done. And so I think my record is clear. You know, I have that on my website, and it's over 100 accomplishments in 6 years. I don't know how many people can actually come to that record.
Okay. Mike Malevsky here, finishing up an interview with Vern Ruppreit, mayor of Wasilla, and candidate on the ballot the first Tuesday in November for House District 7. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Mike, very much. Pleasure.